everybody. It's Jake Sanzano, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barber. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, let me see that little Fitbit. Show it to me, bro. We're going to be talking about fit today, not the Fitbit watches. We're going to be talking about finding impact together with Same Side Selling. This is going to be an awesome show, Jake. I'm excited. Everyone, take out your pen, paper, however you write notes, because this is going to be a chock full of information. And really, this is the... For the Jake and Gino community and for everyone who's onto the community, we use Same Side Selling. We love it. We're trying to find impact together with other members. And I think this is going to be awesome. Looking forward to it, Jake. How you doing?
You know, Barbaro turned sales rep. We are making it happen. So without further ado, our guest today is co-author of the best-selling book, Same Side Selling. He started, sold, and grew his prior companies from zero to over $1 billion in value before shifting his efforts to helping others grow their own businesses. So without further ado, Ian Altman, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me here.
It is our pleasure. So let's go back a little bit. Tell us how you got started in business and ultimately how you grew those companies.
I don't know how interesting it is to other people, but to me, it's interesting. So I was
you lived working, it, man.
I was working for a, you know what, but I've told the story enough. It's like, there are no surprises in it for me anymore, but so I was working for a publicly traded company, and I saw an opportunity in a new era as a technology company back in the mainframe days of the world. And I saw everything shifting towards more PC based systems, and the company I was working for at the time felt that the PC stuff was a threat to them. I said, no, we have all these clients and they'll pay money for this stuff instead of those other things. They didn't want me to pursue it. Like, no, you can't pursue that. It's going to take away from the rest of our business. And the guy I was working for at the time, a guy named Bob. Bob said, well, so why don't you just go do this? And I said, well, no, they won't let me. And he said, no, why don't you just start a business that does this? And Bob ended up, you know, a couple of years later, I hired him as my COO to run the operations of business. So I started that business in 1993. We became a Fast 50 company by 1998. So one of the 50 fastest growing companies in the Washington, D.C. area. We then built a software company, also sold both businesses in the early 2000s. And they asked me to serve as managing director of their parent company. We grew that business from $100 million in value to $2 billion in a little over 3 years. And I was totally burned out and said, all right, I don't want to do this anymore. I was flying 150,000 miles a year of actual air miles, wasn't spending time with my wife or my kids, and thought, okay, why am I still doing this? Didn't have a good reason. So I just stopped. And the board said, what are you going to do? I said, I have no idea. And I was sitting at dinner with some friends and they said, you should help other companies grow. And I'm like, there's a business in that? Like, people do that? And so for the last, 14 years, that's what I've been doing, is helping other people tap into how they can grow their businesses with integrity.
So what is the goal of Same Side Selling?
If you think about it, most metaphors in the sales world, almost every book you ever read about sales either uses a game metaphor or a battle metaphor. Mm-hmm. So in a game metaphor, there's a winner and a loser. In the battle metaphor, the loser dies. And then we wonder why all these systems end up with an adversarial tension between buyer and seller. So I co-wrote the book with a guy named Jack Quarles. Jack, as you can probably guess from his last name, Quarles, is a guy who spent two decades in purchasing and procurement. And so what we talk about is what causes this adversarial tension that pits buyer and seller against one another. How do we instead put the buyer and seller on the same side of the table, in essence, putting a puzzle together? So our metaphor throughout the book is a puzzle metaphor rather than a battle metaphor, because you couldn't put a puzzle together with someone else if they weren't showing you their pieces. And if you weren't showing them your pieces, and let's face it, if the pieces don't fit with one another, there's no reason to pursue anything. And so that
sounds like hanky panky to me.
Well, a little bit like that. Yeah. So this is, but in our case, everyone's fully clothed. So okay, that's the major distinction, Jake, but I'm glad you pointed that out, because that's a slippery slope that many people go down.
You see what I've got to put up every week. Mr. Stenziano, you threw me off my game now, because there's so many questions I got here. The hanky-panky going on. There's two things, everyone, that you need for same-side selling. You require is the getting to the truth about the buyer situation, number one. And people want to buy. They don't want to be sold. Can you expand upon both of those statements?
Sure. I'll start with the second one first, and then hopefully I'll remember the first one. So the second one, this idea is that there are three personas in the world of sales. So you have an order taker, you have a salesperson, and you have a subject matter expert. the order taker is the person who the client knows exactly what they want. Everything's a commodity. They just need to know two pieces of information. How much is it and when can you deliver it? Mm-hmm. The salesperson believes their job is to sell whatever it is they have to sell, whether the client needs it or not. And the subject matter expert is the person the client would tap into because, like, for them, man, I would pay to tap into their expertise because they know so much about this. And so the order taker in most businesses has been replaced by Amazon. So now we have to choose between the salesperson and the subject matter expert. Doesn't matter which one you think you are. What you have to ask yourself is, when you're the customer, who do you want to deal with? Do you want to deal with the person who's selling or the person who's solving? Mm-hmm. So the bottom line is we can either show up in any situation as someone who's there to sell or someone who's there to solve. And let's face it, you walk into a store and the hyper ambitious salesperson walks up to you and says, may I help you? Everyone's knee jerk reaction is the same. No thanks, just looking. Because we've all been on the receiving end of salespeople who are just looking out for themselves.
Predators.
They're begging, right? They're just, I mean, it's just, you know, that's like, hey, just checking in, right? They're begging for business. And we hate dealing with those people. But a subject matter expert is someone you would say, oh yeah, they might solve a problem that's important to me. I'm interested in talking to them. And so it's the difference of you walk into many stores and they're just trying to sell you something. You walk into the top performing stores and they say, what are you looking for? And they go, oh, I'm looking for a gift for somebody. Really, tell me about them. And the lower end stores go, how much are you looking to spend? And they're just focused on
that's
what
the
they
worst
can sell.
Question in the world. It literally makes me angry. You're trying to tee me up right now and size me up. Like, get out of here with that shit. I hate that.
Exactly. So that's that piece. And I was jokingly saying, wait, if I remember the first one, but what was the first question now? You know,
because he's thinking about unclothed people here. That's why it requires getting to the truth about the buyer's situation.
Yeah. So the idea is that in most cases, if you're just a seller, you don't really care what the buyer's situation is because once the sale is done, you don't care. If, on the other hand, you're actually concerned about the buyer's outcome or result that they're going to get, then all of a sudden you start asking questions because the sale is no longer the finish line. Their results are the finish line. So it's like, you know, if someone says, oh, I got a family of five, you don't say, oh, let me show you this two-seater sports car. And for a brief moment, the guy is thinking, oh, I could totally use this, right? But you know that it's really not going to serve their needs. And it's only going to work if you become single, right? Because like if it's their third or fourth car, maybe, but otherwise the family, not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So we just need to make sure. Now, the reason why I say the guy would be excited and there's women around listening saying, well, why wouldn't the women be excited? Because the women are more rational and say, wait, that car wouldn't do us any good. As guys, we're like not that smart. So we're thinking, well, you know what? Maybe this car would work for us. Like
if I just move the golf clubs out of the garage, right? I can find a spot for it.
Exactly.
What I would do, everybody, is here's same side selling. I'm holding this up. And what's great about it, this is the journey. And for anyone out there that are skeptical about getting into sales, this will help you get into sales by adding and by providing value. I wish I had Joey Coleman's book here with Never Lose a Customer in 30 Days, because it's really your job as a salesperson doesn't end at the sale. I think Ian was getting to it as far as once the sale is done, how do we continue that process from an assess point, as Joey says, to becoming an advocate, becoming that really person where you fall in love with the brand?
Exactly. Joey who? No, Coleman. Just kidding. Joey and I are great friends. Joey and I are great friends. We actually put on an event together for several years with our good friend Marcus Sheridan. So he and I are dear friends. I was just I'm just playing with him because if Joey's listening, he's gonna be like, oh man. So the idea is that if you talk to most sellers and you ask them, okay, the initial contact is a starting block. What do we call the finish line? Well, we're high five and we're celebrating. Most people in sales will say it's the sale, the contract. Someone in accounting might say getting paid. You know, it's all those sorts of things. But as Joey points out in Never Lose a Customer Again, the idea is that as soon as the seller is elated that we've made the sale, the emotion that the buyer goes through is buyer's remorse. Like, oh my God, did I make a mistake? So what we need to recognize as sellers is that if the client perceives that we're more committed to the sale than to their outcome, then they're concerned. If we show that we're genuinely more concerned with their results than we are with the sale, then all of a sudden we're aligned. Because now you look at it and you say, okay, so the seller has the same goals that I have. In fact, they talk to us about it. So we might ask questions like, well, just because you spend the money with us doesn't mean you're successful. What will we measure together 6 months down the road, a year down the road, to know that this was the right choice for you? They go, oh, well, here are the things we would measure. Great. Even if we did everything we said we could do, what would prevent you from achieving those results? And now they're going to identify their own deficiencies. So it might be somebody who's investing in properties and they go, well, I guess if I didn't know how to market the property the right way, if I didn't know how to attract the right tenants, okay. Is that something that you'd like our help with? And now you just created new opportunities because you showed them a way as investors to get to that path. And so it's the same sort of thing. If we're focused on the outcome and the result, then we're totally aligned with the buyer and it builds that sense of trust because we're both focused on the same things. In fact, I often ask people when I'm dealing with executives, I'll ask them, so you get two different sellers, one who's focused on who needs to sign off on this, who's, you know, how do we get this deal done? The other person is asking questions about results and what you're going to measure together and what success looks like, who would you rather deal with? Universally, everyone says, I'd rather deal with the person focused on results. Then I ask this question, and I'll ask it, either one of you can respond to this. Would you be willing to spend a little bit more for that individual than for the other one? If you had two different people selling essentially the same thing, one was focused on results, but one was focused on the sale, would you be willing to spend a little bit more for the one focused on results?
You know, go.
Oh, you go. All you, bro.
I'm a shithead prick. It depends.
It depends. One. So it depends. Okay. So you know what, Jake? So let me ask it in a different way. How much less would you have to pay for it to be a good deal, but you don't get the results that you need?
Probably like 25%, honestly.
Okay. Well, right now, so hold on. How much less would you have to pay for it to be a good deal, but you don't get the results that you need? Doesn't matter how much you pay. If you don't get the results you need, it doesn't, it's worthless.
That's right.
It's like, if you don't get the results, then who cares? Mm-hmm. Like, well, I'm buying this thing to get these results, but I'm not getting those results. So
I got a messed up head though. Like I'm going into a full confidence. I'm going to figure something out myself. That's the problem, but you're absolutely right. I can't disagree with you. There's no denying that if you don't get the results, you wasted your money. 100%.
Yeah. And so the idea is that once we
gotta get specific on the product though. Tell me what product is. I can give you a straighter answer.
Oh yeah, it's a Gesertenblatt. Doesn't matter what it is. I'm just telling you that I've done this exercise. So I've done this exercise with a sample size that's more than you and Gino. So yeah. I've done this with a sample size of over 10,000 leaders around the world. And I will tell you that universally, people say, yes, I would pay more. And then everybody has this epiphany when you say, oh yeah, if I don't get the results, it really doesn't matter what I spend. So keep
you just
in mind,
put lighting money on fire.
Yeah. If it's something that's irrelevant, like it's okay. Would you pay more for this paper clip? Because the salesperson is focused
commodity
on results?
Stuff.
No,
that's kind of where my head was going. Like, you know, if I'm buying gold bars here, but you're going to coach me on the market afterwards. Let's, you know,
but even then you're like, well, maybe I'd pay a little bit more, but not much more. Cause I'll probably figure it out.
Yeah. It depends. Right.
But if you're dealing with anything, any type of financial instrument, any type of investment, anything where it requires the level of fit between what you're buying and what someone's selling. Am I in the right market? Is it the right, you know, is this going to be developed the right way? You know, all these different factors, then all of a sudden results become really important.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
What kind of skills, I mean, other than really asking empowering questions and listening, what skills does a salesperson need to employ same-side selling?
In addition to asking great questions and actively listening, it really comes down to curiosity. So you have to be curious and you have to be humble enough to accept that not everyone's the right fit for you. Mm. And
that's tough for salespeople, right?
It is tough for salespeople because many people are focused on activity versus accomplishment. So it's, well, no, I need to have this many deals in the pipeline because I'm only going to close X percent. My answer to that is, well, what if you could figure out early in the process which deals are worth pursuing, which ones aren't? So instead of having to have 5-1, you could have 1.5-1. Like, how much more efficient would it be? How much more enjoyable would it be? Like,
you're riding dopamine highs all day long instead of, man, I strike out. Cause that's the thing, you know, I've done the cold calling back, you know, when I first got out of school and things. That is a grind when you're out there dialing for dollars, and that constant rejection will wear people out. And that's why there's so few people that can withstand it.
Well, and part of it, Jake, I think that the problem is this, is that the way we train salespeople is horrible. And
I agree
so it's this whole notion of A, people don't invest in training their people. And then they make every excuse in the world why they don't. And then they wonder why they're not successful. And they say, you have to make more phone calls and you got to get more meetings. And they're like, oh, thank God. I thought I had to generate more revenue. Yeah, I can do more phone calls and meetings. That's easy. And instead, what we have to think about is your time is precious. And you need to, early on in the process, you need to entice people's interest with problems that you solve with dramatic or extraordinary results. You then need to disarm the notion that you're just there to sell something by acknowledging not everyone's a fit for you. And then you trigger a discovery phase to learn about their situation to see if you can help. That's something that in same side selling we refer to as the same side pitch. So most people, the notion of an elevator pitch is, okay, I'm going to give you 20 seconds of what it is that we do. But it would be like a doctor telling you about what an antibiotic does. And you're like, well, how do I know if I need an antibiotic? Well, because I'm selling the antibiotic, so you must need it. And you'd run away from that doctor. And in medicine, that's called malpractice. And in business, people call it sales. And it's just pathetic. So we need a better way to approach people. So instead, you would say to somebody, well, people come to us when, and then you fill in what they would describe as, I call their elevator rants. A buddy of mine, Bob London, coined this term, the elevator rant. And the elevator rant is, what do people complain about that you're good at solving? And then you get to say, for the right people, we deliver amazing results. Not everyone's a fit for that. So I don't yet know that we can help you. But if those are issues you're trying to solve, I'm happy to learn more to see if we might be able to help.
So you're telling me if a doctor just sits there and pitches you on taking a drug or something over and over again, run the other way?
Well, I mean,
because I feel like you just described the U.S. for the past 2 years.
For most of us. Yeah. Well, you know, yeah. Unless it's a public health official, in which case,
okay, just making sure.
Legal.
Just making sure. Because I want to make sure we're not getting you shadow banned here or something. Okay, my friend.
Well, I'm sure the whole podcast is going to be shut down now because of what we just implied, even if it happens to be true.
Man, Jake, you're killing me at the show.
Gina's turning red.
The same side selling. So let's say you get a customer, a prick like Jake, right? And that was his words.
Sorry.
I love Jake.
I'm sorry. No, I know. I'm apologizing for myself here.
It's usually when you hang up, but go ahead. Yeah.
and he's hard. And basically, you can't same side sell him. You can't find impact together.
That's not true.
How can you at least, well, let's say there's a product that you're not buying and Jack's selling something, but how can you, I don't want to say use Jake, but you're not finding impact together. What are the next steps to say, hey, Jake, do you have somebody that could find this product? You don't want to just ultimately burn a lead or whatever.
Let's make it a more concrete example. So give me an example of what someone may be selling and what Jake might be saying. And then I'll tell you how we would approach that. Because I don't want to make it so abstract.
So let's just say for us, we're selling education. We're selling the mentorship and someone's there and that person is likes it. It's a high-end product. We've got the results. Our students have closed over 35,000 units. Yep. Over 60 people have closed, you know, left their W-2 jobs. And this person's stuck on the price. And we really can't find impact because he's stuck on the price. He doesn't see the value. What can I say to that prospect by saying, hey, can I say something to the effect of this may not be great for you, but do you have anybody else who would look into it? Like, what can I do?
So when,
at that point?
So we're gonna really unpack this. How did the conversation start? So Jake called in.
Great question. Yes.
Jake called in, expressed some level of interest. And I'd say, and we can kind of role play this. It's like, so Jake, what piqued your interest to call us today?
I was listening to your podcast and I love the results you guys have.
Really, what really stood out for you?
Just the authenticity, the fact that you guys are actually in the business doing it and, you know, helping other people do it. So I was interested and you know, enjoyed listening to your guys' stuff.
Got it. So is this something, have you already been investing in these types of strategies?
No, but I see what's happening in the U.S. demographics. I see that we're going to a renter nation and, you know, I'm burned out in my W-2 job. I'm sick of it. And I'd like to try to, you know, create some financial freedom for my family.
Got it. So if you were wildly successful, what would that look like for you a few years from now?
Independence for me and my family, autonomy, owning, you know, cash flowing apartments that basically, you know, support me and my family. And we run a great business, providing great homes for folks, you know, in our community.
Got it. What stands in the way of where you're at now and getting to that type of outcome? And now what he's going to identify is he's going to identify the gaps that he has. And then when you say, well, to get that outcome, we guide people to it. Here's the investment is. And he goes, oh, it's too expensive. And go, okay. So you're saying to get to this point that you have financial independence where you're generating high six, seven figure, maybe beyond income, it sounds like it's not worth the investment. Now, some people tell us that they're just not going to actually invest the time to go through it and execute it, in which case you're probably right. It's not worth making
that's
the
not
investment.
A good fit then, because it takes work to do this stuff, right?
That's, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, at least they're being honest with themselves, I guess. So
yeah, it's interesting. There's on. So one of the things I tell people to do is on your websites, have a page titled Problems We Solve. And so on my website, other than our homepage and occasionally a podcast episode, it's the number one traffic page on our site. And on that page, we talk about here are the problems we solve, and we include here's who's not a good fit. Because the people who just want to flip a light switch and magic's going to happen, not a good fit for
That's
us.
Not life. That's not right? real.
It's not life. It doesn't really work that way.
Yep.
The people who are okay just competing on price, not my people. So the idea is that usually what happens is we present price too early and there's no context for it. And now we're focused on the sale and the other person doesn't know they have the problem. See, when I do this research with people, I put people in groups and I paint a scenario. I say, you're an executive. Someone on your team comes to you and says, we got to solve this problem. We got to buy this thing. It's called a Gesertenblatt. It costs $20,000. It takes the vendor 45 days to deliver it, requires no resources, whatever on our part, and they give us a 10-year guarantee. What are the five questions you have to ask to be comfortable making an informed decision to approve or deny that purchase? Then I give people in groups the ability to come up with five questions, then we have them narrow it down to three. And the amazing thing is that across over 10,000 people, they have the same three questions. And the questions are, what problem does it solve? The second question is, why do we need it? And the third question is, what's the likely outcome or result if I do this? So if we're not addressing those questions for people, we're actually lengthening rather than shortening the sales cycle. So we need to early on talk about, so here's why people come to us. They come to us because they have these sorts of challenges or roadblocks. And if they don't solve these, here's what their life looks like and here's what happens. And if they are successful, here's the outcome that they get. And now people can see that delta between, well, if I don't do this, then I could try and invest these things. I could lose my ass and end up in a world of hurt. Or if I get the right guidance, I could be wildly successful. Yeah, okay, I should probably go with option B. And now I can look at that delta and then you say, okay, so you charge X dollars for this solution to their problem, which is a rounding error compared to the ultimate value if they're successful. Well, now it becomes an easy choice.
Especially in our business in multifamily real estate. And yeah. And that exercise that you just did with me just threw this huge epiphany off in my brain is that when you're comparing this like to what we do on the education side of our business to college can maybe create a job for you if you're lucky and you get into something that's actually training you for a future career or job, whatever you want to call it. The business that we are in and what we create for people is the potential to actually create a life for themselves. And there's a huge distinction in creating a life for yourself that you're in control of and you're driving the ship versus creating a job. And it's just so profound and impactful. It's just crazy now that you're thinking of like the value transfer where it's like, okay, this is, you know, you're talking about price, but people get, you know, and I'm guilty. It'd be the first one to admit I'm guilty of it, you know, by not seeing it through. But I think it's when you have the correct training on the other side, so they can basically translate the information that you need to expand your mind as a buyer, that's where true impact is found.
I'm also going to take this a half a step further, which is if you don't have a conversation with the client / prospect about what their results are that they want to measure, how can you tell them what it's going to cost to get there?
Yeah.
So if you haven't had a discussion about what they're trying to solve and what success looks like, then you don't know. And you can say to yourself, no, because here's what we charge for our program. Okay. But if someone says, here's the outcome I need, you might say, you know what? They don't just need the program. They also need individualized coaching. They also need some other outside advice that isn't even from us. So if this is the outcome they need more than just what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I, much like Joey, I speak to a lot of audiences around the world and invariably someone says, oh, hey, we want to bring you in to speak at this event. And I always say, well, so what are we trying to solve for people? What's going on with your team? Well, I mean, right now they're doing this, they're doing that, but they're not doing this one thing really well. Okay. I mean, that's not costing you money, is it? Oh, we probably lose, you know, $40,000-$50,000 a week in lost revenue because of that. Wow. Really? So across 50 weeks, that's how much? I can do the math. but they, you know, but let them do the math. Oh, it's costing us X millions of dollars a year. Oh, okay. Wanted to solve that. You know, if we do a one and done, you may not get there. Here's what we would typically do in your situation. We do this work in advance. I deliver this program. Here's what we do over the following 60 days to make sure it sticks. Here's the investment is to do that. Does that make sense to you? Because it's not about just delivering that one piece. Sometimes someone says, look, we got a full agenda. We got a bunch of people who are fans of Same Side Selling. We just want you to be there to speak at this event. Great. Okay. Now I know what their outcome is, what they're looking for. That's different. That's like, okay, then I can cover some high level topics. Everyone's going to be excited. I'll sign some books, kiss some babies, whatever, you know, life is good.
Ian, can you repeat those three questions again real quick so people can get a chance to jump
in? I forget what they are. No, I'm just kidding. So the three questions are, the first question is, what problem does it solve?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The second question is, why do we need it? Mm-hmm. And the third question is, in essence, the ROI question. What's the likely result or outcome? Mm-hmm. And what I say, the important distinction there is that this isn't what the salesperson says the ROI would be. This is what do they feel is the likely outcome or result. So it often comes from a combination of what they hear and what they see in reviews, testimonials, things like that, that give them the confidence that they'll get similar results.
I love that. And your same side pitch, you were going through it. You know, companies come to us when blank, we help them buy blank so they can blank. You want to go over that real quick?
Sure. So the idea is that it starts with the elevator rant. So what's an elevator rant? The elevator rant is the upside down version of the elevator pitch. Mm-hmm. Elevator pitch is we've all been taught, and most things that don't work in sales are things that someone else taught us. And we just didn't know it sucked. And we started doing it. And then as we advance in our career, we teach other people to do the same stupid thing. And that's how these things happen. And then we wonder why people say, no thanks, just looking, when they encounter someone in sales. Because we built that culture. It's our fault. And so the elevator rant is this notion. You get on an elevator, it's just you. The doors are about to close. Someone sticks their arm in. The doors spring open. Two people representing your ideal client walk on the elevator with you. Doors close behind them. They spend the entire ride up to, let's say, the 20th floor, complaining to one another about something that when you hear it, you think no one's better at solving that than we are. In fact, they're lucky to be on the elevator with us because we can really help them. What does it sound like in their words they would be complaining about? It rarely is going to describe your products or services at all. So in your business, it could be somebody who says, man, you know, this is driving me nuts. I thought we knew what we were doing. We started investing in some properties and now instead of going up, it's going down and we just don't know what we're doing. If this keeps up, you know, we could lose our asses. We could, you know.
God, this third party management is such a hassle. I wish I had a good third party manager because we bought right now. It's just trying to find that would be an example.
Exactly. So it could be anything like that. The idea is, what are these rants? Most businesses will have six or seven rants. And then the idea of the same side pitch is you mix in the two or three that are most likely to resonate with those people. So if someone reached out to you and said, what do you guys do? Well, typically individuals come to us or investors come to us because they started investing in properties and this third party management is driving them nuts. And not only is it driving them nuts, they're not getting the rental revenues they thought. Their expenses to manage the property are through the roof and they feel like they've gone sideways on these whole transactions. And if they don't solve this, it could really deal a crushing blow to them financially. For the right individuals, they tell us that we give them clarity, we give them insight into how to solve that problem so that in a short
period of time— How to manage a manager with key performance metrics that are delivered in a timely fashion.
Whatever it is. But not everyone's the right fit for how we approach that because it does require a little bit of work. So I don't yet know that we can help you, but if those are things you're facing, I'm happy to learn more to see if we might be able to help. And that middle disarm part about not everyone's a fit for us, sometimes people in sales are uncomfortable with that because they don't really believe it. It happens to be true. So we have to realize
it's true. And you have to be able to, you know, in your soul, set yourself and the person on the other end free and allow everyone to have autonomy. Otherwise people are not, you know, basing decisions by choice versus they're doing it by coercion and no one feels good about that. And that's when the buyer's remorse kicks in. And that's when the ickiness comes in. That's what you do not want to be involved in. People need to have choice in their decision-making. They don't need to be pushed.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the idea is, it's funny, pre-COVID, I used to do this exercise with audiences that I don't do now because too many people freak out. But the idea is that I would have people put their hands palm to palm with another person in the room.
Dude, you got to get back to it. It's okay to live as a human,
bro.
Man. No, but the freedom. Let's go.
You're talking to the universe. You're talking to me. Believe me, my life hasn't changed at all in the last 2 years, other than a lot more virtual events than in person. But I'd speak in front of a live audience all the time, wouldn't change. But I recognize that not everyone maybe thinks like we do. So that's okay. The idea is that we do this exercise and have everyone put their hands palm to palm with the other person. And I'd hand out these cards, and half the cards said to the person who got the card to gently push against the other people. And half the cards told the people, start by gently pushing and then pull your hands away. And if you looked in the room, you couldn't tell who had which card because everything was the same. In fact, the people who were pushing hard against the other person, got resistance. And the people who initially had some interest and then slowly pulled away, the people would follow them. And it's the same thing in business, which is if you create something of interest and gently pull it away, people who are interested will tend to follow. If you're applying pressure, they tend to resist.
When's the book coming out about dating next? Because I think there's a lot of similarities here.
So it's funny that you say that. Almost any time I do these full day workshops, almost every time I do it, there's always some guy, generally looks like Jake, who sits there
looking
and goes,
for like a two-seater to clear out the golf clubs. Man, exactly. he's just pegged me, man. I am right in his crosshairs today.
Exactly. You know? And there's usually some guy looks like Jake and goes, can I use this in dating? And I'm
like, qualifying a prospect, that three-step formula. You had touched that. Entice, disarm, discover. You want to go through those real quick because I think those are really, really important.
Yeah. So the idea is first we entice by sharing problems that we solve with dramatic or extraordinary results. See, this idea of entice, disarm, and discover is counterintuitive for a lot of people who have learned other habits in sales, because people have been taught that you start with an open-ended question, this really all-encompassing question about what's bothering them or what's concerning them. And people have probably have heard someone say, well, you ask them, what keeps you up at night? You ever hear people ask that question?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. So someone asked that question, and they say, oh, my dog licks himself. Now, what do you got? Like, okay.
Put him in the room next door so you don't hear it.
Yeah, what else keeps you up at night? Well, my neighbor throws loud parties. This guy, Jake. Okay. What else keeps you up? And it's like you're fishing. And the reality is we have to recognize that oftentimes the biggest challenge that we solve for a client is something they're not even aware of. In fact, it's a blind spot for them. And so if we start with discovery, we're not going to get the most important thing to them. We're going to get the thing that is most recent in their mind that may not be that important. Mm-hmm. And so instead what we want to do is say, okay, here are the kind of problems people come to us to solve, which is the entice part, but not, and we deliver great results for people having that problem, but not everyone's a good fit for us. That's the disarm part. And then the discover part is, but if you're facing one of those issues, I'm happy to learn more to see if we might be able to help. And so that mechanism allows people to opt in or opt out. And if they're not facing one of those issues, you need to have the realization that if they don't care about those issues, they're probably not a good fit for you right now. It doesn't mean they never will be. And sometimes what happens is my clients will share this idea of entice, disarm, and discover. The client says, yeah, I don't need that. And then 2 days later, they're like, you know, actually, the second thing you mentioned is actually pretty important to us. Mm-hmm. It's like they call back out. Oh, really? What was it that caught your attention about that? Mm-hmm. And now we're having a discussion about what's important to them, not what's important to us.
Love that.
Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know, this isn't a high-pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now.
All right, we are back. We're going to have some fun now. I want to find out about Ian personally. Looking for some habits, anything that you do on a daily or weekly basis that has added value to your life.
Well, I don't know if it adds value to my life, but I'm an avid wine collector, and my wife would call that a vice. I call it an attribute. and you said on a daily or weekly basis, let's just say that the...
An hourly?
I don't know about an hourly basis, but the UPS guy and the FedEx guy, they're not our friends. I mean, we give them generous gifts every year, and I'm convinced it's still not enough, because when I see that guy wheeling up, you know, a dolly with three or four cases on it multiple times in a short period of time, and he's looking at me like, this guy must be trashed.
and you're giving him back problems, man. So you're not finding impact together there. I don't think
he's got a card. It's okay. But you know, so there's a lot of people where they've got these daily routines and habits and things like that. I'm not one of those people. In fact,
think you do. I think it's like emotional effect. I think it's heart health. I see what you're doing here, man. It's okay. Nothing wrong with that. But it depends. What's the favorite? What's the wine of choice here? What's your favorite?
You know what? I'm really into the big Rhone varietals in Central Coast California. So the big, what they call the Rhone Ragers, that are out there. So the big Syrah, Zinfandel, Mourvèdre, type of blends, which is also the same thing as the Rhone Valley in France, is also similar to the Shirazes in Australia. So our cellar is largely made up of that, and then champagnes and ports and enough white wines so that we can actually serve things that aren't just, you know, big, bold, you know, it's all just beef and lamb. You just occasionally need to eat something else.
Sounds like a party going out over his place there.
Well, and the funny thing is that my wife and I, outside of when we're entertaining other people, we might open a bottle of wine once a quarter if it's just the two of us. But when we entertain, you know, it's like we'll have, you know, if just one other couple is over, we go out to dinner, we'll bring three or four bottles for people to share and for the sommelier to sample and things like that. Because the key to any sommelier is their experience in tasting wine. And the reality is that there's certain wines that we get that they might taste once every 5 years. So if we can bring stuff they get to experience and taste, it's kind of a cool thing for them too.
That's awesome. That's an experience.
Adding value to the life of others.
Same. Is that what it is?
Or we're just partying. So you've been obviously part of scaling many businesses. Any tips for the listeners out there that you found this was like the most impactful part of scaling our business?
This is going to sound counterintuitive. It's narrowing your focus to the people you can help the most. It sounds counterintuitive. Well, I want to really grow. So what should I do?
Elaborate on that.
So what should I do? I should narrow my focus. What do you mean? Well, so there are people you can help really well, make a huge impact for. And there are people who, you know, I could help them and so could a bunch of other people. And the challenge is that you get measured based on the average of the impact you have for everybody. So if there's some people that say, yeah, it was okay. And other people were like, oh my God, it was great. People are like, well, I'm getting mixed reviews. If you focus on the people you help the most, they start telling other people, oh my God, this is transformational for me.
Yes.
And so, for example, I've had people I speak often to financial services companies and businesses in the wealth management space. And those people, it's very common that they will say, oh my God, I doubled my business and it was much easier than any of the prior years. It's like, yeah. So those people, they tell their friends, because that's an environment where everyone kind of knows each other and like, wow, your business really grew. What'd you do? I did this thing. I joined the Same Side Selling Academy and I was in this cohort that Ian Altman did. And wow, this really helped us. Okay. So, but if I kind of just said, okay, I'll be everything to everybody. And I'm going to help, you know, if someone's marketing a consumer product or rather than a financial product, rather than a business product, but yeah, I'm going to help people sell watches. Guess what? There's a lot of people who can help people sell watches, probably better than I can. You know, I haven't done research with over 10,000 people on how individuals buy watches. But in terms of complex decisions and people in leadership roles making decisions, I've done that research. So I intentionally don't focus on those other areas. And people will say, well, no, I've read same side selling. I think it would apply to our business. I'm like, I'm sure it would. Here's someone else who I know focuses just on that space. And people think it's crazy. Like, you're walking away from business. I'm like, no, I'm walking away from somebody who I can maybe help as well as 100 other people can. Mm-hmm. So I can focus on the people that I can help arguably better than anyone else.
Serve the best. Yes. Yeah. I really like that. So same side selling, obviously great. We want to get that out there. Any other books that you've read over the last year or so that you want to recommend to the folks that added value to your life?
Yeah. So Phil Jones wrote a book called Exactly What to Say. I don't know if you've read Phil's book. Mm-mm. You can read it in about 20 minutes. And it's absolutely brilliant. He's only sold, I think, about 1.5 million copies of it. So, you know, if you can buy a couple copies, I think it'll really help him out. So Phil's done amazingly well. And his book is based on this principle of magic words. And it's little phrases and things that you can use in business communication, in sales, that are highly effective. So, for example, without stealing the thunder of the whole book, one of the things that Phil will highlight in there is a question like, so how open would you be to X? Well, what's someone's alternative, right? Either I'm open to it or I'm a total jerk, right? It's like, so when you ask that question, how open would you be to considering something like this? Well, I'd be open to that. Okay. And so it's just little phrases that will often move the needle in those types of conversations. That's a great one. Michael Bungay Stanier wrote a book called The Coaching Habit and The Advice Monster. Highly recommend those.
Yes.
There's a lot of books that I could point to, but those are a few that really stand out.
Ian, can I ask you a question about any former sales trainers? I was just listening to Zig Ziglar last night.
Yep.
Training must have been back in the 80s. And he was talking about sales and wordsmithing. And was he a big influence on same side selling? I think he's the guy's magical. I mean, I go back and listen to him with his Southern drawl and the way he looks at prospects. Do you like him or any other sales?
So I think that Zig Ziglar is you know, one of the pioneers of consultative selling, and any type of consultative selling, whether conscious or not, has had an influence on me in same side selling. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing when Jack and I wrote Same Side Selling, the way we came to know each other is Jack was in the business of helping companies on the procurement side. Mm-hmm. And so we worked with a ton of companies, and what happened was he'd be talking to people who were selling to them, and their company was like, oh yeah, well yeah, we paid more for these guys because we liked what they were talking about. And Jack said, well, okay. And he would talk to the salespeople and say, hey, is there any type of system that you guys follow or use? Well, yeah, we trained with this guy, Ian Altman. And Jack's like, okay. So once it was like 3 or 4 people in a row that have gone through the same training, I'm like, okay, why are people so willing to spend 20, 30% more for this stuff? So he came to a program that I was doing and I was like, oh, this is cool. He wants to work on growing his business. He just wanted to see what kind of tricks that were being taught. And he's like, well, everything you're doing is integrity based. It's actually totally aligned with what I tell people they should value on the buying side. And then, you know, we put together those concepts that I was teaching at the time into this notion of same side selling. And now obviously the book's in the second edition, but there are so many different systems. And I guess what same side selling really is, in my prior business, I would often bring in people that did some sort of sales training or any types of speakers periodically just to develop our team and give them a different perspective. And if I really look at it, same side selling is kind of, I took kind of the best of like things that I felt worked really well and threw out the parts that I thought were disingenuous. And it's kind of a hodgepodge of, you know, 15 different systems, mm-hmm. and the things that I found worked well in growing our business. And so all of those, there's a ton of different people I've got amazing respect for. There's a guy also, Jim Cathcart, in the sales world. And Jim talks about how the term closing business is a bad term because you're not closing anything, you're opening a relationship. So mm-hmm. we should call it confirming the sale, not closing the sale. So that's something that always sticks in my head. It's like, that's a great thought that other people don't think about.
Love that.
Those words will create your culture. So I think it's very impactful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Ian, would you be open to sharing your website and how folks can learn more about same side selling?
How open would I be? I'd be pretty open with that. Sure. So yeah. The easiest place is samesideselling.com. You go to samesideselling.com, you'll get to the Same Side Selling Academy. And people can, in your audience, like reach out to, if you reach out on LinkedIn, mention this podcast, because I get a lot of people who are just trying to sell me something, which I always think is fascinating when I get a, when every day I get stuff on LinkedIn saying,
hey man, well, don't be a hypocrite now. Come on, man.
I know how tough sales can be. And so we can help you with leads. I'm like, really? Come on, guys. So, but if people just, in your audience, the listeners here, if people just say, hey, Jake and Gino show, that's all I need to hear. And happy to connect to those people. But SameSideSelling.com and the Same Side Selling Academy, it's all just, it's a fun community. So for me, I'm lucky that I never feel like I'm working. I just like, you know, it's always,
you know, created a life for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know what, it's a blast. I mean, it's, we do these monthly coaching sessions with our members, and it's the most fun hour of every month for me. It's just live role
more
play
fun
of,
than this. Come on. Come on. More fun than this. Yeah, seriously.
It actually is, Jake. But just a little, just a little. All right.
Gino, how open would you be to wrapping this up?
1993. I guess Ian started out
closed. Oh, not closed. Converted. Wait, created a relationship and impact together. I don't know. Shit.
He was out in the corporate world, good doing the grind. And it's amazing, you know, all the years that he's put through the system and all the people that he's mentioned. And I can see him sitting at the dinner table with his wife, having a nice little lamb chop with a nice little, I'm more. I like cabs, to be honest with you. I'm a cab drinker, and just hanging out. And the great thing about it is, Jake, what I love about Same Side Selling, it really, you do create a system, and it doesn't feel as if you're trying to sell somebody. You're trying really ultimately, we didn't even mention this, but you're really trying to provide
value. It doesn't
value.
Feel, or it is just creating impact together and value.
Yeah.
Right?
And you're creating value. And what we like to say, Jake and Gina, we start out with the goal setting process. If you can't set do your goals, and we, you know, when you come to us, we review your goals. We always want to leave somebody in a better spot. That's what the goal is. And I think with Same Side Selling, you're trying to leave that prospect, the person, even if you don't do business, leave them in a better spot, leave them with some resources, leave them with a great experience so they can continue to like your brand. And then one day when they do see that they need the help, they'll come back to you. So it's been an amazing process for us. It's really helped us to create that community that we want to continue to have impact, and we want to continue to grow using this model. So just want to thank Ian for being on today.
That's awesome. You know what? I'm loving hearing how you guys are using the system and how it's helping your business and helping other people. And that's what it's all about. You know, the most exciting part for me is seeing people's case studies. And so the thing I will leave you with is, if every time you've got a client, you think to yourself, what's their case study going to be 18 months from now? And are we confident we can deliver that? Mm. Then you're never selling anything. You're just helping people get to a better place.
That's awesome. I love that. Think about the case study. Think about that person in the future and how he's going to have his first or second multifamily property and how he's actually planning to leave his W-2 job. That's what the goal is with Jake and Gino. We create multifamily entrepreneurs. That's what our ultimate goal is.
AKA fulfillment. It all comes down to it. So Ian, really appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming on today.
Thanks, guys. Ian. It was fun.
Take care.